Chapter 44. At some deep level, we're all of us connected. It seemed that Night Song, while she felt the blood of her strong and powerful mother, whom she loved mightily, when she looked up at Hawkman, handsome in his coppery feathers, his eyes flecked with gold, she also felt the blood of those magical Selkies, those enchanted Ondines, those lusty mermaids, those Lamia from far back in her ancestry. And it was all this blood, enchanted and not, that made her slip down the tallest tree, while her mother, the one who raised her and protected her and loved her so well, slept unawares. This blood that led her straight into the wings of Hawkman. And like those other legendary sharp shapeshifters, the moment he wrapped his wings around Night Song, she stepped out of her scaly skin and into the skin of a human, a beautiful, sleek skin, while he shed his avian form and claimed his own human shape, tall and handsome, coppery feathers in his long black hair, his eyes dark with glints of gold, warm and welcoming. Here they were, two in brand new skins, facing each other. Hawkman held out his hand to Night Song, and she took it. And all around the watchful trees, the oldest ones shimmered. They knew that Grandmother Moccasin, when she awoke, would not be happy. The trees knew, but they also recognized the moment for what it was, a love so strong that there was no going back for either one. So for just a little while, the soulful trees used their own ancient magic to stir up the zephyrs of sleep, to keep all the others in the forest a-snoozing until Hawkman and Night Song, in their brand new skins, had slipped away. For trees, who see so much sorrow, so much anger, so much desperation, know love for the rare wonder of it. So they are champions of it and will do whatever they can to help it along its way. A cat who has been nearly drowned needs some time to recover. A cat who has lost his calico mother, who's been taken from his sister and their very own hound, needs a lot of solace. But first, this cat needs to find some food and shelter, especially with the evening drawing nigh. Puck looked around. At his feet ran the awful creek. A shivering crawled down his spine. Water. We must be near water. He coughed. He pulled himself up the bank away from its dreaded currents. His coat was matted from the mud at the bottom and along the sides. He was wet and cold. He looked back at the silvery creek and shivered again, and then he looked as far upstream as he could. His mother had been right behind him, hadn't she? She was right there, pushing him up, telling him to swim, swim, swim. And he had. But when he dragged himself out of the water, she was nowhere to be seen. He looked at the creek rushing by. Where was she? His calico mama. She had been right behind him. He turned around and looked downstream. Maybe she had swum by him, past him in the tumble of the waves. As he stared, he saw the water curl around the bend. It hissed against the muddy banks. Away, 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 it seemed to say. And then, right there on the shore of the Silvery Creek, that creek full of tears, Puck knew that he would never see his mama again. Never. It's a soft-sounding word, never. But its velvety timber can't find its sharp edges, especially to a small cat who has broken the rules and conjured the word in the first place. He sat down hard, soaked and cold. In his deepest bones, he knew that no matter how long he stared at the cold water, he would never see his mother again. Never pressed down on him. It grabbed him by the neck and shook him. He sucked in the deep breath and sucked in all that never and started to sneeze. Never filled his nose, his eyes, and his soaking fur. He shivered again and looked at the opposite shore. Where were Ranger and Sabine? He cocked his ears. Surely Ranger would call for him. If only the hound would raise his voice, Puck would know what direction to follow. He was sure of it. He sat at the top of the bank. Below him, the creek slid by. The creek that took his mother. The creek that almost took him. He listened for Ranger's familiar bay. But all he heard were crickets and a few evening birds. He shuddered and turned away. And there in front of him was an old tree, dying. As he approached the tree, he noticed a dark space at its base. Puck went closer. He sniffed the opening. He looked inside. It was small in there, but it was dry. Stay in the underneath. You'll be safe in the underneath. Those were his mama's words, still in his ears. He had broken the rule, and now she was gone, and he was all alone. He walked inside. It was cozy and dark, and even though his belly rumbled, he curled up in a wet, muddy ball and drifted off to a fitful sleep. Never, hard and cruel, settled up against him. How could he know that deep, deep below him, almost directly below him, in fact, there was an ancient beast curled up just as tight? She, too, was asleep in the underneath. You wouldn't think that these two, one so young and one so old, would have a thing in common. But they did. Missing. Yes, missing can happen to the best and the least of all of us. Puck missed his family, and Grandmother missed Night Song. The trees, the alder, the magnolia, the laurel, the flowering ash, know about missing. They miss the passenger pigeons and the woodland bison. They miss the panthers and the black bears. They miss the kudu, who roamed here for eons. But they also know about revenge. Revenge stays lodged in the memory for a long, long time, for a thousand years. After Hawkman and Night Song slipped away, Grandmother Moccasin wrapped herself in a cloak of hatred, wrapped it so tightly around herself that eventually that was all she knew, anger and hatred. Wound together, have only one recourse. Poison. Poison filled Grandmother's mouth, her cotton mouth. A man had taken the one thing that she loved more than water, more than air, more than the man who had betrayed her so long ago, her daughter, Night Song. Grandmother vowed revenge, a vengeance so bitter it glazed her skin and sharpened her terrible fangs. She simmered in the darkest part of the piney woods, where the cypress trees towered over the marshes, where the ground was thick with quicksand, where she settled into the nests of Night Song's cousins, the tribes of cottonmouths. No human dared to enter this part of the forest, and that suited Grandmother, suited her just fine. Here was anger, hard and cold. So tight it shut out all the light. Her eyes grew accustomed to the darkness so that nothing was safe from her. She dined on owlets and mink and frogs, anything that moved or didn't. Her hunger was enormous. She could spot a marsh rabbit from 100 yards. Her lethal jaws, like scissors, snapped her prey in half. And as her anger grew, so too did she. Long and thick, her body as big around as a tree's trunk. Even her old friend, the Alligator King, knew to give her a wide berth. Sister, he told her, choose another way. But she could not. Sst, she said, sooner or later, Night Song will be mine again. The alligator closed his yellow eyes, heaved a heavy sigh, and sank to the deep and muddy bottom of the Bayou Tartine. Garface found the old house one day when he was out coon hunting with Ranger, back when they both were much younger, before the accident that made Ranger lame. Stumbled upon the house that even then tilted to one side. Who knows how long it sat there abandoned? There was no light bulb and no running water, but Garface needed neither, nor did he need a mailbox or a telephone. Few creatures in these woods ever knew that Garface was here. No one in the old hidden tavern ever met his eye, and he made no attempt to meet theirs. He simply sat in his dark corner and drank his bitter brew. No coins were ever exchanged, only skins. Skins that he hung on the porch rail of his tilting house to let them dry. This tilting house that sat perched on a spit of high land where he parked his truck, where he could curl up on the old cot that served as his bed, where he could come and go in his own way and time, and no one would be the wiser, where he could throw his trash into the yard, and no one would care, where he could use the old outhouse without closing the door, because there wasn't a door anyway. Usually, it's better for a house to be inhabited. There's something about the moisture in a person's breath that restores old wood and gives the place some dignity. A house with people who live there tends to sit upright on its moorings. Usually that would be the case. Maybe this house sat for too long before Garface moved in. But if you looked at it from just a few feet away, if you could get close enough without Garface aiming his rifle at you and snarling like a wolf, you would swear that it was sinking into the ground of its own accord, as if the only way to escape from its terrible inhabitant was to disappear into the earth. Sabine was the witness. She had awakened just in time to see her brother step into the sun's dim light. She had see him roll onto his back, see the beams of the sun float onto his tummy. She had seen him smile up at the lovely light, seen his coat glow in the shimmering gold. She started to step into the shimmering with him, even though she knew he was breaking the rules, the rule about the underneath. But just as she called out to him, there was Garface. She witnessed Garface as he snatched up her brother and then her mother and stuffed them both into the brown burlap bag. Watched them throw them into the back of the pickup truck. She had tried to tell them, tried to warn them, but her cries were lost in her brother's cries. Her cries had matched his and so sounded like only one. She witnessed the truck drive away. She witnessed the dust, the mean and swirling cloud of dust that curled around the back tires and filled the air. She witnessed the trees shivering as the truck disappeared from her sight, carrying her mother and her brother. And as if all that wasn't enough for one tiny kitten to witness, then she watched Ranger tug against his chain and howl as if his heart was breaking. His heart was breaking. She knew. She witnessed it. Saw him pull and pull against the chain, saw him yelp and cry and howl until he had nothing left, until his neck was raw and bleeding where the chain dug into the skin, rubbing the fur away and left it bleeding, raw, sore, until he had no voice at all, until he couldn't utter a single sound. She witnessed Ranger as he dragged himself back underneath the house. The house that tilted to one side, the house that smelled of bones and flesh and something rotten, underneath, and all she could do, all that was left, was to curl up beside him, beside the hound, her beloved hound, the one who had sung to her even when she was still inside her mother. She curled up beside him, licked his silky ears, and purred. That was all she could do. Her mother was gone. Her brother was, too. But she had Ranger, and she knew that they had to get away from this place, the only place she had ever known. Even in her smallness, she knew that Ranger would not last much longer tied to that chain. Memory is a slippery thing. When something terrible happens to you, like the loss of someone you love, like the loss of a mother or a father, or perhaps a twin sister or an old hound, memory can turn into a soft blanket that hides you from the loss. But this was not the case with Puck. No, he remembered. Soon he would have to figure out how to keep his promise to his calico mama. Soon he would have to find Ranger and Sabine. Soon he would have to eat. His belly rumbled. He had not eaten anything for a whole day and night. All he had ingested was water, lots and lots of water. He sat up and stretched. He licked the fur on his left side and got a mouthful of dried mud. He spat it out. His coat was caked in it. All at once, he felt trapped by the dried bottom of the creek, encased. He had to get it off. For the next hour, he tugged and licked and rolled. The mud was like concrete in his fur. When he pulled at it, tufts of fur came out with it. Ouch! He started to panic. He tugged and licked and rolled some more. Finally, he began to cry again. His skin itched. His mouth was dry, and he was still a mess. He lay down in a heap and wept. Wept for his silver fur coming out in patches. Wept for his missing mother and sister and hound. At last, spent from so many tears, he pulled himself up and looked around. He had cried so hard that now he was full of hiccups. Puck had been hungry before, but now he was starving. Mouthfuls of dry mud did not satisfy a hungry cat, especially one who was growing despite his travails. Everyone knows that a cat is built for stalking, for tracking its prey and pouncing. He wished that he had paid better attention to the advice of his mother when she had brought home the mice and lizards and voles for himself and his sister to practice on. "You'll need to know how to catch your own one day," she had told them. Sabine had taken her seriously. But for Puck, they had been a game. Lizards especially provided hours of amusement. He loved to bat them into the air and catch them with his front paws. It had all been loads of fun, but now his belly rumbled and his skin itched. He was not interested in playing. Trouble was the key to stalking any kind of prey. Trouble was the key to stalking any kind of prey is silence. Hiccups are not silence. He tried holding his breath. Hick! He tried lying on his back. Hick! He felt like crying again, but he knew if he did, he simply would have more hiccups. A cat with hiccups cannot sneak up on anything. A cat with hiccups is a sorry sight. That's all for tonight, girls. That Puck better get busy. He's got a lot of stuff to do. He needs to find his hound and his sister, and he first needs to find something to eat. All right. I love you. Sleep tight.